highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Marlo Harmon, a lifelong Racine resident who's currently employed as an addiction counselor at Racine Correctional Institution. And now, here's today's host.
And thank you, David Cole. I'm Jim McClure, your host this week for Community Matters. And we welcome back an old friend. I believe it might be time number three now. Dan Kaler, the director of tours and special programs for the Yerkes Observatory here in Williams Bay, where we broadcast today, where we record our show at the Morgan Room of the observatory. Dan, welcome back. Good to see you again.
And it's good to see you too, Jim. Thanks for having me. Memorial Day weekend this year at Yerkes, so that would be the 26th, 27th, 28th of May. During the day and in the evening, I have a couple friends of mine whose company, Explore Scientific, makes the eyepieces that I use on the 40-inch refractor program that people actually look through. And these were hand-selected by me for that particular program to really bring out great details in objects that the refractor can show us. Those fellows are going to be here Memorial Day weekend showing off their telescopes, their eyepieces, their binoculars. They have microscopes that they make as well, so a lot of optical equipment. They're going to be doing that on the north lawn of the observatory, so it'll be very easy to find. You just come up the ellipse toward the building and you'll see them there. But Greg Bragg and Scott Roberts from Explore Scientific will be with us Friday, Saturday, and Sunday during the day, and then also in the evening to show off their equipment. So it'll be an excellent opportunity for people who are interested in perhaps buying good quality binoculars at reasonable prices, amateur telescopes at reasonable prices as well, high quality equipment at good prices. Yerkes gift shop happens to be a dealer for Explore Scientific. So this is a really nice way of getting hands-on experience and use of their equipment during the day. Provided weather cooperates, we'll be looking at the sun with safe solar filters, and in the evening, obviously looking at celestial objects through those telescopes as well. They have some very expensive equipment that they're going to be bringing to show, a robotic telescope, a robotic mount as well. Limited audience for that, obviously, but you can come and see the most recent developments in amateur astronomical equipment. We will also be operating the 40-inch and the 24-inch programs those nights as well. That is by registration only, so that's not part of the Explore Scientific demonstrations. That would be something, you know, completely separate from what Greg and Scott are going to be doing. But we do really strongly encourage people to come out 26th, 27th, 28th Memorial Day weekend to really experience some great amateur equipment and get their hands on it and talk to some very highly specialized professionals about the type of equipment that they have, and perhaps go home with a telescope.
The Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, visited in just the past week, a week ago, and he noted in discussing the character of Walworth County a very striking fact that the state has just released that once again, I think for the third year in a row, Walworth County is the sixth largest of the 70-some counties in Wisconsin. The sixth largest, much more than its population relative to it, the sixth largest revenue bringer of tourism. And our own County Visitors Bureau, the Walworth County Visitors Bureau, headed by Kathy Seberg, kind of recognized your contribution. We think of you as a tour director and program specialist extraordinaire, but now you've got something to hang your shingle on as far as tourism, too, a little kudo along the way.
Well, at the 2017 Walworth County Visitors Bureau annual dinner and meeting and awards ceremony, and this was really quite a surprise to me, the Bureau bestows three different awards each year upon the membership of the Walworth County Visitors Bureau. And we, Yerkes, was the recipient of the Friend of Tourism Award. It's the very first award that was given that evening at the Abbey Resort in Fontana. So We're very honored to have been recognized for the type of work that we've been doing here, which is in helping to increase the tourism base of Walworth County and bringing people in particular to Williams Bay, to the west end of the lake, where as many people stay over on the east end, for good reason. There's a lot going on in the city of Lake Geneva, and we love Lake Geneva, and we love the lake, obviously, as well. But Yerkes is located on the west end of the lake, and it's wonderful to have been recognized for the work that we're doing here.
You've been at the helm here how long now? I want to say October of 2015?
Well, officially full-time since October of 2015, but I've actually been doing tours here since the early 1990s, and I did that part-time, filling in for Richard Dreiser, who is still with us. He's still working with us in the tour program and is working part-time now. And I'm basically the full-time aspect of the tours division, but I do a lot more things than just tours. I'm scheduling different events here at the observatory. We just got done opening a brand new gift shop here at the observatory as well, so that was our winter project this year. Opening the 40-inch refractor for public viewing, that was my first task starting at the end of 2015. So, and then developing more robust 24-inch observing program as well. So there's a lot of aspects to what it is that I do here, but a lot of it has to do with public education, promotion of the observatory, so to raise awareness of it. I work both with Visit Lake Geneva, and we are members of that organization, and then also the Walworth County Visitors Bureau. We're very active with that organization as well. And I was just elected, by the way, to the board of directors of the Walworth County Visitors Bureau. So I have a 3-year term ahead of me there. First, I take my office in June of 2017. So I'll have 3 years to work with them more directly. But we're playing a much larger role in tourism in Walworth County. And this is definitely a great destination for people to come and visit, and our numbers of visitors, the number of visitors that we have, and the locations that they're coming from has vastly increased and improved over the last couple of years.
When I was asking you about, you know, when you took on the full-time role, I wanted to compliment you on how much the character has changed. Maybe that's not all you're doing, but you certainly have influenced and been a catalyst of it. From being an institution and a facility that talks about things that go back eons and timeless and year to year, but this has become, in my layman's view, a yesterday place to very much a today place, and look what cool is happening next week place. Fair enough?
Yeah, exactly. And if I'm nothing, I'm definitely a character. People will tell you that. So I appreciate the comment about being a character, or having character. But our goal here has always been to make the place relevant, to make Yerkes relevant to people today. It's not a museum. It's not. In fact, people around here sometimes will bristle when they say, "Oh, it's just a museum now." Because we're not doing active research work. Well, we are doing a lot more than that. And that is introducing people through our observatory public observing programs, through our daytime tours, to the science of astronomy and astrophysics, and explaining to them how Yerkes was the linchpin to the past and the present and the future as far as astrophysics is concerned. When Yerkes was founded, and this is our 120th year, on May 20th, as a matter of fact, we're celebrating first light with the refractor. And that was the first time, May 20th, 1897, was the first time the telescope was used.
So are you and I going to, as this is the 20th, are you and I going to be blowing out a 120-candle cake after the show?
Well, I'd love to do that. And then, by the way, before I forget, this is also the 180th anniversary of Charles Yerkes' birth. That would be June 27th. He was born June 27th, 1837. We will be doing a cake for that.
I'll be there.
Yeah, and so that is that's a definite. That weekend for visitors, we will be doing a cake for Charles Yerkes. I'm not going to do 180 candles, so I'll probably burn the place down. with 180 candles, but we will be celebrating his birthday. I'm more into, and that's another thing that we're doing now, we're celebrating more of these types of monumental events and these milestone events, the 120th anniversary of the founding of Yerkes, the 180th anniversary of Charles Yerkes' birth. Next year will be the 150th anniversary of George Ellery Hale's birth, and he was our first observatory director and is considered the father of modern astrophysics. But prior to the establishment of the observatory and the development of the science of astrophysics, most astronomers were involved in what's called positional astronomy. They were measuring the position of stars. They were refining the orbits of the planets. They were discovering new asteroids and calculating those orbits, refining those orbits. They were discovering new comets and refining those orbits. But really what they were not asking, they were asking the questions of where things were located, but they were not asking the question of what they were and how they came about. And that is what astrophysics is all about. So that's what George Ellery Hale's contribution to the science of astrophysics and the science of astronomy really was. And Yerkes is the beginning of that, which is why we're known as the birthplace of modern astrophysics, and he's considered the father of modern astrophysics. So there was a huge change in the way that astronomy and astrophysics were thought of and the way that the science was actually conducted and explored and expanded. Was basically as a result of what George Ellery Hale started to do here at Yerkes. So that's really the significance of what we try to tell people when they come here. That's why this is still an extraordinarily relevant place, and they can learn more about astronomy directly. There are very, very few institutions in the United States, or worldwide for that matter, that would open their major telescopes to the public on a regular basis and invite them in to look through them and to learn in a two-and-a-half-hour program, how these things came about, what the things they're looking at, why they're significant, why astronomers study those, and what we can tell people today about those objects versus what George Ellery Hale could have told you 120 years ago. There's just a tremendous more, there's tremendously more information now available than there was 120 years ago. We know so much more about what's going on around us in the universe than we did back in 1897. So that's really a great story that we can weave when people come here, either for a daytime tour or for an evening observing session.
How much University of Chicago is left in the University of Chicago Yerkes Observatory? There's certainly plenty of maroon in the gift shop.
Well, we have a new gift shop, and it is maroon, as a matter of fact, and that was done on purpose. University of Chicago has been very good about supporting the observatory, continues to support the observatory. Those of us who work there, it's where our salaries come from. That's where our benefits come from.
And your email address is?
My email address is UChicago as well, yes. So we're all employed by the university. Yerkes is a great place to, it's kind of like a chameleon. Changes colors not real frequently, but every once in a while, we repurpose the observatory for different things. And now, no longer research work being done here, and that hasn't been done here for several decades, but it's a great public education center, not just for astronomy, but for technology in general. We have a fab lab in the lower level of the observatory that a number of our high school students use. We have something called the McEwen Scholars Program, so high school students can join that program after school, come here and work with science teachers on specialized projects, may or may not have anything to do with astronomy, may have a technological bent to it. The public tours are all basically now focusing on the history of the observatory, scientific research work that has been conducted here, and then using the big telescopes for public observing programs. Yerkes Education Outreach is working with kids during the summer camps, and their biggest program now is called IDATA, I-D-A-T-A, and the acronym, unfortunately, I don't recall exactly what that stands for, but it really doesn't matter. What it is development of programs teaching astronomy to the visually impaired, to the blind and visually impaired. We also do programs here in the evening that center on the Wisconsin School for the Deaf over in Delavan. And those kids can come here and learn astronomy in a very friendly environment. And so we work with children who are hearing impaired as well. So it's Yerkes is all about expanding the reach and the influence of astronomy among the general population, people who are interested in it. And we just want to make it more accessible. So we continually find ways to make Yerkes and astronomy more accessible to the public. And we have a multitude of ways that we can do that. So that's what's going on here today.
We're surrounded in Walworth County by agriculture and things starting to grow and farm markets. And what better analogy to what you're doing now with a new emphasis on educational research that, as impressive as a field is, as impressive as a sunflower is, how much more impressive is the small amount of seeds that can grow into so much? And as we talk now about everything that's going on in the next week, within the next month, the educational and sowing those seeds is definitely at the fore for parents, for interested teenagers, for grandparents. There's a very real deadline approaching in a few days, isn't there, for getting involved in your wonderful summer camps and educational experiences for younger members of the community?
Well, one of the divisions, Yerkes is divided into a couple of different divisions, several different divisions, actually, and one of them is Yerkes Education Outreach. So that's run by Kate Meredith. She's my counterpart on the education side here at the observatory. And one of the major projects that they work on every summer are summer day camps for kids age, they would be grade school. Third and fourth grade are put together in those camps, fifth and sixth and seventh and eighth. And the deadline for the sign up for those camps is May 31st. So there's a number of different camps that they can learn about. They can call, people can call the observatory here to learn about what camps are available. And there still is space on most of those camps. But they have to do not just with astronomy, but with, they're called tech camps. So there are technology projects that they work on. So there are things that they can work on for a four-day period. Those camps are always conducted in the afternoons. And they work with science teachers, and then also we have a group of college interns from the University of Chicago. Most of these kids are in, most of our interns are in science-related study, but some of them are outside of those disciplines, and a lot of them are involved in physics, some of the allied sciences, some of the other physical sciences. But they're here. We have an army of interns this year coming to work with our grade school kids and to work on other projects here as well. So it's going to be a great summer for people to be involved in activities here at the observatory.
You know, as we go through the things that are coming up in the next week, the deadlines within the next 10 days, there's actually an army around us as we speak. Now that it's roughly about 11:25, the Wonders of Williams Bay Tour is going on concurrently with what I imagine is your second to last tour of the day that started around 11, and Richard Dreiser and Mr. Huddies are about that, and you're slipping in and out, I imagine. But the Wonders of Williams Bay Tour, which is promoted on our last Community Manager show out of Walworth County, is people are going to all the remarkable history of Williams Bay, from the first Indian settlers to the railroad that used to deliver passengers right to downtown up till 1965, to Mr. Williams himself, Captain Williams, for which the town is named, a veteran of the War of 1812, being buried in Delavan East Union Cemetery. So these folks are visiting all these places and enjoying them today, and Saturdays are no stranger for Yerkes. It's what became, I think, a community standard. The people would go out on Saturdays, or they would visit and see it in their hotel and come on out. Go time for you right now. How do you handle all the extra folks? I recall you and I doing in an earlier Yerkes StarQuest, heard right here on WGTD at about 12:20 on Thursdays and Fridays, that you were looking for extra docents and help during the summer. How do you handle all the stuff that's going on here during go time, and then you've got Wonders of Williams Bay today to even add into more numbers?
Well, basically, we don't sleep. That's number one. So,
and you don't, and you make sure everybody double parks.
Yes. So we, you know, we put our personal lives aside in the summertime. We get something on the order of about 12,000 visitors a year to the observatory, and that counts all of our grade school students who come for school tours. That counts the people who come for observing tours in the evening. And primarily, that's also our daytime people as well, our visitors during daytime hours. So, yes, we could always use more help. We could always use additional assistance greeting people on Saturdays, help with our new gift shop because that's been expanded. So there's always work that needs to be done there as well. We could use help preparing telescopes, keeping the scopes clean, keeping the building clean, and that kind of thing. There's a very small group of us, very dedicated to helping keep the observatory running. But as we age, we get slower, and it would be helpful to have some younger people. All of us would love to retire someday, but we want to be able to turn the observatory over to a group that is capable and interested and as passionate about it as we are. So we are always looking for people to help us. Right now, I'm actually looking for to train some people to take over to do some of the observing programs in the evening, in particular the 24-inch observing program. So reaching out actually to amateur astronomers who have knowledge of operating telescopes. These things are not like pointing a Dobsonian telescope on a lawn toward an object. There's a little bit more involved with working with the 24-inch and especially with the 40-inch refractor. But I am looking for people to help us do those kind of programs and keep that kind of work going.
And hopefully we're reaching some of those people right now as we speak. At the halfway point, we better say who you're listening to and why. You're listening to WGTD-FM. News and classical music out of Kenosha and Racine on 91.1 FM. And here in the Williams Bay, Geneva Lakes area on 103.3 FM in Lake Geneva, 101.7 out of Elkhorn, our county seat. And we're from Gateway Technical College and your source in southeastern Wisconsin for not only music and news, but community affairs. We're at the Yerkes Observatory in Williams Bay with Mr. Dan Kaler, the Director of Tours and Special Programs, and he is one busy man at one busy facility. And this summer, which is go time for all the tourism that comes here and the 12,000 people that come every year, we're going to have some very major events, starting with eclipses in August. What type of eclipse and how prevalent is this, not only in southeast Wisconsin, but where else can folks see what's going to happen here, Dan?
Well, Jim, we're really fortunate this year after a dearth, and that's about the only way you can explain it and call it, a dearth of total solar eclipses that have not occurred in the continental U.S. The last time we had a total solar eclipse that touched the 48 states, it was February 26, 1979. I was 21 years old and a senior in college at UW-Whitewater. So I traveled to Williston, North Dakota in the dead of winter to see that eclipse, and that is the last one. That track, eclipse track, covered Oregon and Washington along the Columbia River gorge and went into Idaho and Montana, North Dakota. And then the eclipse track cut up into Canada and ended in Greenland. So that eclipse was actually about the same duration as the one that we're going to see on August 21st. But that eclipse track on August 21st is very, very interesting. And it's the only time since the founding of our country in July of 1776 that the track will cut diagonally from the Pacific coast to the Atlantic coast directly across the country. It'll actually divide the country essentially into two halves diagonally. And so that eclipse track covers 11 states. It starts out in Oregon, runs through Idaho, Wyoming, down into Missouri, Kansas, Nebraska, that area, a little bit of Illinois And actually, the maximum duration of the eclipse is just southeast of a point in just outside of Carbondale, Illinois, which is 425 miles straight south of the observatory. And it continues into Kentucky, Tennessee, a little bit of Georgia, and South Carolina, and then sweeps out into the Atlantic. The only landfall for the eclipse are the states that I just mentioned and the continental U.S. It starts out, the track starts out in the Northwest Pacific. There are no islands that it crosses in the Northwest Pacific. Touches the coast of Oregon, runs across the continental U.S., exits land on the coast of South Carolina, goes out into the Atlantic, and before the shadow can touch, the shadow of the moon can touch the coast of Africa, it sweeps back off into space. Total path length is something a little over 7,000 miles long. It takes a few hours for the eclipse to take place, so the shadow will sweep across this long track from Northwest Pacific out into the central eastern Atlantic, and that eclipse, maximum duration, 2 minutes, 41.6 seconds, just southeast of Carbondale, Illinois. So it's a great event. It's the first of five eclipses that are coming up total solar eclipses between now and the year 2052. So that dearth of eclipse, total solar eclipses, is coming to an end, at least for the time being. The next one is in April 2024, and that track comes up from Mexico, crosses into Texas, and then cuts northeast from there, goes out towards New York City. I'm not sure if New York is actually in that path, but it's going to be very close to it. So we have another one coming up in April 2024. In fact, there's a spot in Kentucky that is going to experience both of these eclipses, the one this year and the one in 2024. A little bit unusual. It's usually a spot on Earth can expect to experience a total solar eclipse once every 375 years. So that little spot in Kentucky, which is just a little triangular, or actually I should say quadrilateral area, is going to experience two eclipses in 7 years, and that's kind of unusual. Or listeners can just wait, and if you want to see one from Yerkes, we'll have one here in 2099. We'll have an eclipse that comes straight over the observatory. And we expect the observatory to still be here, so someone here at the observatory will actually observe that eclipse. But if you don't want to wait that long, we've got a great one coming up in 2017.
2099, if I add up the, let's see, that's 82. You and I do about 40 StarQuest shows a year. So, yeah, we'll be on something up in the thousands. And I don't think we will have run out of ideas by then.
But you know what, Jim? I think we'll be watching that from a different vantage point in 2099. That's what I tell my visitors here, and that's one thing that I try to get across to people is the fact that these events are not super rare. We have a total solar eclipse somewhere in the world every year. But to have one come so close to you, you need to take advantage of that, and it's a real privilege to see one in your own country. I've actually had to travel to Mexico, Venezuela, Bolivia, and Egypt to see eclipses. So you have to. It's a great way to see the world, but the fact of the matter is it's so easy to see this one, and that's what I've been telling people for the last year. We've been promoting this eclipse since April of 2016 here at the observatory. And I've probably talked to, I'm going to wager to guess that I've talked to maybe 7,000-8,000 people, something like that, about the eclipse. So I'm a big promoter of these events because they are so spectacular, so unusual. It's one of the greatest natural phenomena that we have to observe. If people have seen a partial solar eclipse, if they've seen a total lunar eclipse, those are interesting, but they pale in comparison to the to viewing an actual total solar eclipse. So I'm really strongly recommending that everybody travel a few hundred miles, 400, 500 miles south, get into the eclipse path, and actually experience that great event.
If you can't travel, and formerly having been in the transportation business part-time yourself or worked alongside it, our listeners are everywhere from Kenosha and the lakefront to Darien and Delavan to the west, and Whitewater and East Troy to the north, and down to Harvard, Illinois, and Lake Forest. Good chunk of southeastern Wisconsin is listening to us. So let's talk very quickly with this major event. First of all, What can you experience or what can you learn and when at Yerkes about the big solar event?
Well, if we're talking about the day itself, we will have a program here at the observatory for people to safely view the partial solar eclipse, because we will have an 88% partial, meaning 88% of the sun will be obscured by the moon here at Yerkes, which leaves about 12% of sunlight left. So it'll be noticeably dark, but even that 12% of sunlight will still make it look like early twilight in the morning or early twilight in the evening, something like that. So it'll still be relatively bright. When you're in the path of totality, it's pretty dark. It's not midnight dark. It's not like that. But the sky does get very dark. The surroundings get very dark. So you might notice some birds roosting early in the middle of the day. You might notice some animals acting a little strangely because they think nighttime has come early. They're getting ready for bed instead of going about their daily tasks and that kind of thing. But we will have a program here for safely viewing the eclipse with telescopes and some staff members here to explain what's going on. And then also to live feed, more than likely, the total eclipse from somewhere in the path of totality. I don't have the dates. We know the date is the 21st. I don't have the time as to when that program is going to start. So that's something that 'll be announced on our website as well. So again, it's going to be an 88% partial. So it'll be a deep partial eclipse, probably one of the deepest partial eclipses that most people have ever seen. So they'll get to experience some of what a total solar eclipse is like, but we do not have totality here at the observatory on August 21st.
Back in the last one, though, the one where you yourself journeyed, was that in the 70s when you were a senior in college?
1979, yes. That was February 26, 1979. And so that's the last time that we had one in the continental U.S. But I have observed eclipses from Mexico in 1991, from Venezuela in 1998, from Bolivia in 1994, which that was a fantastic trip, and then 2006 in Egypt. So I haven't traveled to see one since then. So this will be number 6 on the list of total solar eclipses that I've seen. And I've seen one annular eclipse, and that was in 1994 as well. I saw that one in Toledo, Ohio. That eclipse track, annular eclipses occur when the moon is too far away from the Earth to completely cover the sun. So we call that the ring of fire. So it appears to be superimposed over the disk of the sun, and there's an annulus or a ring of sunlight around the moon's limb. So it's a very interesting thing to see, but it's not a total eclipse. It's one of the types of central eclipses. A total eclipse of the sun is a central eclipse as well, where the moon centrally locates directly over the disk of the sun. So I've seen one annular, and those are interesting. I guess I don't really care to see another one of those. That particular one went on for about 12 minutes. Annularity occurred. It was almost exactly 12 minutes. So it takes a long time for the moon to completely move through the disk of the sun in an annular eclipse. This one, the total solar eclipse, is going to be quick. The actual partial phases take about three and a half hours or so from beginning to end. The total phase of the eclipse, the maximum duration down near Carbondale, Illinois, is 2 minutes 41.6 seconds. And then away from that point, either to the northwest or the southeast, the duration is a bit shorter by 5 or 10 seconds, depending upon where you're located. So I'm going to be in York, Nebraska, just south of York, Nebraska, as a matter of fact, for this one. I picked a location for myself. And the tour staff, all four members, are pretty much planning on being somewhere in the path of totality. Other members of the observatory staff may locate in the path of totality. But we have a strong group of interns, and we have a strong group of volunteers who will be helping people observe the partial eclipse here at the observatory, while the rest of us are in the total path.
Well, congratulations. You've sold me. My commanding officer in the United States Naval Sea Cadet Corps, where I do the Navy, Marine Corps, and Coast Guard equivalent of what you do here, teaching and being alongside young minds that are learning about the service. My CO is down in Charleston near SIU, where he's based out of. I think I'm going to go for a visit to go and see what's going on. The other thing is a personal note. You know, whenever I come out here, there's something about this place. I don't know if it's seen set in masonry above the door, Yerkes Observatory, University of Chicago, or when you step into these classrooms and laboratories that look straight out of a movie set, especially the Indiana Jones movies that always start in a 1930s classroom. But, you know, I hear, germane to our format of our radio station that you and I appear on, you know, I hear Holtz, the Planets, you know, so some of the soundtrack music from The Right Stuff. But throughout our talk tonight, I keep hearing Carly Simon singing, "You flew your Learjet up to Nova Scotia for the total eclipse of the sun." It's amazing how much this institution goes into all ages and all types of events. I want to ask you, concurrent with that interesting time in August with the solar eclipses, not so good for the Perseid meteor showers, as luck would have it, which usually happen around the 11th or 12th. Those wonderful showers you can sit out on the lawn here or your back lawn and just see shower after shower.
The Perseid meteor shower every year is the most reliable shower that we have, and is the result of a comet, the debris from a comet that intersected with Earth's orbit, and that comet actually passed through in the early 1990s again and replenished the stream. So periodically that, and I think that comet, and I'm probably going to misquote this, is on about a 200-year orbit or so. So we were lucky enough to all be alive the last time that it came through and did that. But the shower itself is actually very very reliable, but unfortunately this year, and it always, this is oftentimes the case, has to compete with moonlight. Best scenario is for the shower to coincide with new moon. Well, that doesn't exactly happen this year. It's actually 5 days after full moon. So the moon will be up later in the evening, and that's about the beginning of the best time to view the meteors. So we'll still see bright meteors, but we will not see the more than likely the fainter ones. So this is not going to be a great year for Perseid meteor shower viewing. That doesn't mean people shouldn't go out and take a look and make the effort. Usually after midnight is the best time to view that. The radiant point where those meteors appear to come from. Think of this, and I oftentimes use this analogy. We in Wisconsin are either fortunately or unfortunately, however you feel about snow, we have to drive in the evening during snowstorms or snowfalls, and with our headlights turned on going down a highway, snowflakes appear to emerge or come at us from a point in front of us. It's an optical illusion, you know, obviously. That's exactly the same way that the meteor stream appears to come to us. So all of the snowflakes appear to radiate outward from one point directly back toward us. That's exactly how the radiant point of a meteor shower works. So they all appear to radiate from a point we call the radiant, and that is in the constellation of Perseus. And that constellation rises above the horizon after midnight and is well-placed approximately 1 a.m., 2 a.m. So the radiant point is above the horizon nicely by that time. So that's usually the best time to start observing from then on until sunrise or dawn, actually. So always, almost always, meteor shower viewing is best after midnight. We're also turned, the Earth is turned into the stream at that point, so that makes the meteors travel faster, they burn brighter, and they're much more obvious to us at that point. So that is the best recommendation that I can give people. That and laying on your back on a chaise lounge and just looking straight overhead. We get a lot of requests for people to, they want to view through the telescope because they think they're going to see the meteors better. The best way to view meteors is with your unaided eye, laying back and looking toward the northeast, looking straight up. The meteors will appear to radiate from that one point in the constellation of Perseus, but then they will make themselves known all over the sky from that. And when you trace them backwards, they'll all go back to that radiant point in Perseus, which is why it's called the Perseids, the Perseid meteor shower because of the radiant point being in the constellation of Perseus.
Dan, you know, it's always an honor to be in your presence, and I've known you 3 years as a man who, frankly, probably has the equivalent of a doctor's in astronomy and of whom it has been said. I know someone told you once, gee, I felt like I got a master's today just on the tour. So from soaking in your presence for 3 years and having had what I guess is little known, the semi-related distinction of being the nephew of the university's president, George Beadle, from 61 to 68. It's time for me to show all that sophistication and knowledge that I've gained with the segment we'll call What the Heck Is That? Okay. I look up with my lack of sophistication, and for the past week or two, and I probably totally missed it, it's been a month or more, a beautifully bright object near the beautifully bright moon. I'm going to guess it's a planet, but I don't know whether it's Jupiter, Mercury, Charon, or a speck on my eyeglasses. What is that?
Well, the one you're talking about is Saturn, but we need to back up a little bit and talk about how this all works, because your listeners shouldn't get the idea that every time they look at the moon, they're going to see Saturn nearby it, because the moon is actually in orbit around the Earth, as we know. So it goes through phases. It takes about 28 and a third days for it to make one revolution around the Earth. But what it's doing, and what the sun does, or appears to do, and what the planets appear to do, is move through 12 different constellations that we refer to as the zodiacal constellations. So a lot of people think of the zodiac and the horoscope as being the same thing, and that all goes back to the Greeks thousands of years ago who laid out this whole system. But they happened to notice that the sun, the moon, and the planets appear to travel through 12 distinct constellations. It's actually due mostly to our revolution around the sun and the other planets' revolution around the sun that the stars are very distant, and they appear to travel through these constellations. While the stars are way in the background, the planets are much closer to us. So as they revolve around the sun, they appear to move from constellation to constellation. So right now, Saturn, this year, is residing in a constellation, as we say, of Sagittarius. And it's going to be there for the vast majority of the year. Last year, it spent most of its time in a constellation called Ophiuchus, which is the serpent bearer in mythology. And Ophiuchus is actually not a zodiacal constellation. There are actually 13 constellations in the zodiac, but Greeks didn't like the number 13. And it had nothing to do with number 13 being bad luck. That came much later. They didn't like 13 because it was an odd number, and it was also a prime number. And the sun only spends about 10 days in the constellation of Ophiuchus, so they decided to ignore that one. Well, occasionally, the planets will pass through Ophiuchus. They have to, because that's the plane of the solar system travels through there. So last year, Saturn was in Ophiuchus, which falls between Scorpius and Sagittarius. So this year, Saturn has moved enough in its orbit to now be in Sagittarius. So that's why you saw it, and the moon happened to be there at the same time. It's no longer there. It's moved on in its orbit. After that, it would go into Capricorn and Aquarius and Pisces and so on. It would keep moving around the Earth and appear to be moving into those different constellations. But Sagittarius is pretty much exactly going to be where you mentioned it was, in the constellation of Sagittarius. Right now, the big planet to observe, the very bright one in the evening sky, and it will be there through a good portion throughout the spring and into the summer, is Jupiter, and that is in Virgo right now. So it's a little bit farther west of Saturn. So those are the two prime planets that we'll be observing this summer, is Jupiter first and then Saturn right after that. Mars is kind of out of the picture this year. Last year we were looking at Mars. That's kind of an every other year situation for us. So we're going to have a very nice apparition of Mars next year. It'll be the closest to us that it's going to be for about the next 7 to 9 years or so in 2018. So we will have a lot of good Mars viewing next year, but we will not be doing that this year.
Dan Kaler, I want to thank you for joining us again on Community Matters. And listeners, I want to thank you and implore you to follow up with me and Dan every Thursday and Friday right after the the business program on the Midday News with David McGrath. Right after the business report and A Moment in Time, you can hear Yerkes Starquest with me, Jim McClure, and usually Dan Kaler and some of his colleagues. Dan, thanks again for another great and educational morning with you.
Well, thank you very much, Jim.